Let's all go to the lava.
Welcome to the Saturday Frights Podcast. I am the Projectionist, your co-host for this radio program. Now, come, join your host, Vic Sage, as we enter the vault to once again discuss retro horror films and television programs.
I definitely could have done without being stuck in that panic room for almost 9 hours, Projectionist.
It was rather stuffy in there, even for the vault. I fear there were too many bodies in such an enclosed space.
We were just lucky that the majority of the staff had already gone home when we had to pull the alarm. At the very least, the vault security team said they were able to drive off that ghoul fever-infected plague rat.
For now, Sage. For now. I fear this infernal beast may have been...
Been what? What were you going to say?
Nothing to concern yourself over.
I really think you just need to head up and talk to the Retroist. Let him know what you accidentally unleashed, my friend. If this thing you summoned up can do as much damage as you say...
Look, Victor. The recording light on the control panel is glowing red. That means it is time for us to begin our latest Saturday Frights radio broadcast. Dear listeners, we have a special treat for you today. We shall be discussing a new horror picture that has been released called Nightmare Cinema.
That's right, friends. Welcome to a new Saturday Frights matinee episode. Nightmare Cinema is a film that pretty much all of us at the Retroist Vault have been eagerly awaiting since it was announced last year. Not just because it's a new horror anthology film.
Yes, much like 1945's Dead of Night. Or, naturally, the amicus offerings, such as 1972's adaptation of EC Comics' Tales from the Crypt, or Milton Sobotsky's delightful 1980 picture, The Monster Club.
Yeah, I was about to touch on that before you interrupted me, Projectionist. There have been more recent horror anthologies, of course. The one that I hold dear and did my best to champion was Michael Dougherty's Trick or Treat from back in 2007. As I was saying, though, one of the reasons we were so excited for Nightmare Cinema was the directors involved with the project. Mick Garris, Ruhei Kitamura, Joe Dante, David Slade, as well as Alejandro Brugues. Now, we are going to do something a little different from the standard Saturday Frights episode. Mainly, we aren't going to be hitting you with full spoilers for Nightmare Cinema.
By the Dark One, Sage! You know the deal. Listeners do not mind full spoilers. They have said as much in their electronic missives.
That might be true, my friend, but with Nightmare Cinema, we are dealing with a film that has unfortunately not been given a wide release. In fact, we screened it here at the Vault, courtesy of buying it on iTunes. I do believe, however, that it is also available on Amazon Prime. At the time of our recording this show, it was just announced that Nightmare Cinema would be hitting DVD and Blu-ray on September 3rd.
You mentioned after we screened the film, there was a movie service that you pay for that would be showing it as well?
Yep, it will be on Shudder at some point this year. I'm afraid I don't know that exact date. If you are a frequent visitor to the Saturday Frights Facebook page, you will know that we are pretty big fans of Mick Garris and Joe Dante. Between them, with Piranha, The Howling, Gremlins, Critters 2, The Stand, Matinee, and Masters of Horror, to name a few, there are many reasons to celebrate their work. And like I touched on just a second ago, throw into that Midnight Meat Train's Ruhei Kitamura and Alejandro Burgess from One of the Dead, as well as 30 Days of Nights' David Slade, and you see why you do have something special with Nightmare Cinema. A world view of horror. Projectionist, before we start diving into the synopsis for the film, you said you were able to locate something you thought the listeners might appreciate.
Indeed I have, dear boy. Earlier this afternoon, after we left that panic room, intern Rockford J. found this audio clip from director Mick Garris, part of the rather impressive collection of commentary and film historians at Trailers from Hell, explaining how Nightmare Cinema came to be.
I'm Mick Garris, and we are here at Trailers from Hell. In 2005, I put together a television show that had a philosophy. Masters of Horror was put together to be a showcase for filmmakers who'd been kicked around a lot. We wanted to take the best filmmakers in the horror genre from around the world, give them an opportunity to tell their stories their way without interruption, without people getting in the way. And it was very successful in that regard. We had people like John Carpenter and fearless leader Joe Dante, John Landis, Dario Argento, Toby Hooper, and we really had two seasons of a great experience. I tried to do it again right after that show was canceled, doing something more international in flavor. And it took me 12 years, but we finally put together a feature film version, an anthology movie, brand new film featuring myself, Joe Dante, Ryuhei Kitamura from Japan, Alejandro Burgess from Cuba, and David Slade from the UK, and it's called Nightmare Cinema.
That was awesome. We'll be sure to include a link to this particular Nightmare Cinema trailer on the Retroist for this podcast post. I want to add that thanks to the crew of the Shockwaves podcast, which is a Blumhouse production, an excellent show, by the way, although definitely not safe for work in regards to language. Anyway, they just recently had Mick Garris and Alejandro Burgess as guests on the show. Garris pointed out that it took 12 years for him to get Nightmare Cinema off the ground. He actually started the project off with the idea it could be another horror television series similar to the Masters of Horror. He also made a comment, if I heard correctly, that Nightmare Cinema was made, the entire film, for the cost of one episode of the Masters of Horror series. So this is truly an independent movie, and the cast and crew signed on for their love of the project. I'll also be sure to include a link to the Shockwaves podcast site. They are worthy of your time to listen to, I assure you. As Nightmare Cinema begins, we meet the first and most important character of the entire film, a silent character at that. I'm talking about the rundown movie theater, the Rialto. This rundown movie palace appears to be a beacon of sorts to six individuals from all walks of life, who, one by one, find themselves in front of the movie theater. Even more curious is the fact that they find their names up on the marquee, although some don't realize this. For example, our first character we meet is Samantha Smith, played by Sarah Elizabeth Withers, and it is her name that is attached to a movie entitled The Thing in the Woods. Samantha enters the theater. In fact, a ticket from the ticket booth appears on its own, and she is drawn within. Perhaps out of curiosity, but more likely confusion, a white-hot spotlight directs her toward her seat.
It looked like to me, dear listeners, as if she were yanked down into her seat by an invisible force. Moments later, she catches a brief glimpse of the projectionist. No, not myself, of course, but of actor Mickey Rourke as he starts the theater's projector. And young Samantha is drawn in by what is unfolding upon the silver screen.
This plays out much the same in all of the five stories for Nightmare Cinema. The protagonists find themselves taking a seat and seeing the horror unfold on the movie screen, much to the delight and amusement of Rourke's projectionist. I don't think it's a big spoiler to say that what we the viewers see is something that has unfolded before or will take place in the future in some cases. So, as Alejandro's The Thing in the Woods starts up, we see Samantha running for her life, covered in someone's blood. Much like in the Friday the 13th series or numerous other slasher films, Samantha is being stalked by a serial killer through the woods, an ominous and mostly silent killer wearing a welder's mask. In fact, while he is quite a capable killer with all manner of weapons, he appears to prefer fire to dispatch his victims, as we do see the remains. Now, the projectionist and myself have stated in the past we are the furthest things from critics. We're just fans of horror movies and TV shows and enjoy talking about them with you. However, I've read some online reviews that seem to miss the fact that The Thing in the Woods, which was written by Alejandro, is actually a horror comedy. Some of the reviews were stating you've seen what goes down in this segment of Nightmare Cinema in 100 other movies. That's the point they are missing. We've been dropped in the third act of yet another slasher movie. Or so it seems.
Yes, this segment of the anthology is a puzzle. The viewer of the film is not immediately given the full picture.
Well said, my friend. What you are seeing may not be what you think it is. Which brings us to the next segment of Nightmare Cinema, entitled Mirari, which happens to have been directed by Joe Dante, from a script by none other than Richard Christian Matheson, son of the late and equally great Richard Matheson. With Mirari, after we are introduced to two young and possibly inebriated lovers named David, played by the Young and the Restless, Mark Grossman, and Anna, portrayed by Beyond Skylines, Zara Maller, as they find themselves drawn inside to the Rialto Theater. We see that life is slightly mirroring what is occurring on the big screen. You see, Anna has a disfigurement, a noticeable scar on the side of her face from a past accident. Her fiancé, David, could care less, but it's easy to see the young woman is doing herself a great disservice. She cannot see the beauty that her fiancé does. No matter what he tells her, she holds his own physical beauty as something against herself. How could he truly love her with how she looks?
Thankfully, the dear boy has offered a very special gift. He will put his fiancé's mind at ease by paying for a minor plastic surgery operation, courtesy of a friend of the family, Dr. Lanier, who helped his own mother with her own issues.
Dr. Lanier is played by the fantastic Richard Chamberlain, possibly best known for 1974's The Towering Inferno, or possibly 1980s TV miniseries Shogun. If I didn't know better, I would say he's trying to act like Roger Corman. So, after a consultation, Dr. Lanier's operation on Anna is a success. However, there is something that is off-putting about the Mirari Institute, and Anna is determined to get to the bottom of that mystery, for better or for worse.
Dear listeners, this segment of Nightmare Cinema is a slow burn, allowing you to get to know the characters better before placing a toe in the realm of horror. This one might stick with you.
Joe Dante shows, as always, why he is a master filmmaker, one that should be given more opportunities, in my opinion. Mirari's disturbing to be sure, but I would offer that the next segment, entitled Mashit by Ruhei Kitamura and David Slade's This Way to Egress, are the ones that will stay in your mind after the credits have rolled. At least, they're the ones that legitimately frightened me. The wrap-up of Mirari gives us our first true introduction of Mickey Rourke's The Projectionist. Bare-chested and dressed in a black leather jacket, he is creepily amused by meeting with Anna, as this brief clip reveals.
Who are you?
I'm the projectionist, sweetie pie. I'm the curator of 100 years of nightmares, trapped in a silver screen that never forgets.
What do you want from me?
You might call me a death collector. I would love watching yours.
Next up is Mashit, which was written by Sandra Bissarelli. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. As this segment begins, we see Father Benedict, played by Maurice Bernard of General Hospital. The priest is wandering past the Rialto. The marquee flashes to life, and the man of faith notices this, turning around to look up and see that he's appearing in Mashit,
which is the Hebrew name for the destroying angel. angel, marsh heat, meaning destroyer.
Benedict is drawn into the Rialto, doors opening to the auditorium on their own. The priest pauses, though, when he sees what appears to be a pool of blood in the aisles of the theater, which is when he meets the projectionist himself, who tells him to take a seat. Where with the thing in the woods, the excitement started right off the bat with seeing Samantha running for her life. Masheed begins its hard-hitting and unflinching horror with terrified school kids screaming as one of their own, a boy named Peter has climbed to the top of the church, laughing maniacally and pointing down towards those assembled.
Or perhaps he is pointing to one child in particular.
I think we should add that the church appears to be an orphanage as well, as the assembled students definitely live there, as we see later. In the crowd of shocked and frightened children is Father Benedict, as well as Sister Patricia. The young woman is the one to climb up herself in an attempt to help Peter down. This might be a small spoiler, but the kid is foaming at the mouth and making deep and disturbing animal growls. And it also appears as if he has done some harm to himself.
He's possessed, Victor. That is the word you're looking for. It is plain as day.
Exactly. And it's a painful possession. And the outcome is not a happy one. Doing our best here not to step too far into spoiler territory, you'll have to remember, listeners, that each segment is around 20 to 30 minutes long. Let's just say that in Masheed, there are many wrongs committed for what might at first glance look to be the right reasons. Perhaps even more than the next segment, as I've already mentioned, it was Masheed that really shook me up. There's a bit of a Suspiria vibe, and it's beautifully shot, but there are some incredible haunting images.
I will add to the ramblings of my co-host in that it goes to places you perhaps would not like to visit.
In some of those reviews I read, they felt that the Rialto, the nightmare cinema itself, is not just showing these people who have entered the theater what has or may happen, but it's judging them too, letting them see their sins up on the big screen. Granted, one of the reasons this segment scared me is I've always been frightened of films dealing with demons and such. Have to rank them right up there with ventriloquist dummies in terms of the horror genres that give me the willies.
I was surprised, Victor, that you sat through it all.
I said it gives me the willies, my friend. I didn't say I had a problem with getting safely scared. There are two final segments in Nightmare Cinema, and I found them both to be equally moving, although in totally different ways. The main protagonist of This Way to Egress, Helen, played by Elizabeth Reaser of Ouija Origin of Evil and Netflix's Haunting of Hill House fame, is introduced standing in the lobby of the Rialto. As she wanders into the auditorium, she hears a cell phone ringing. Finding the phone, which could be a lure perhaps, she immediately takes a seat as This Way to Egress begins to play on the big screen.
Director David Slade wisely decided to shoot his segment of Nightmare Cinema in black and white. It aids in giving a jarring look to the sets and the bizarreness of what Helen is witnessing.
This Way to Egress plays like a darker version of a Twilight Zone episode, in my opinion. Helen and her two children are waiting in the lobby of the office of Dr. Salvador.
Certainly a name chosen for Salvador Dali, considering the way that Helen sees faces around her become distorted later in the segment.
I would agree with that statement, projectionist. Dr. Salvador, played by Breaking Bad and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory's Adam Godley, while not stated, I believe he is a psychiatrist. You see, since Helen's husband left her, she's been having, let's call them episodes, where she sees things changing around her. Soot covering surfaces and streaking walls, and everyone physically distorting, their voices changing and sporting nightmarish features. All but her two kids, although she mentions to Dr. Salvador that they've changed too. At times, they seem normal, acting as they look, like two young boys. But other times, they suddenly appear to be far, far older. The horror of This Way to Egress, as David Slade and co-writer Lawrence C. Connolly have presented it, allows you to wonder if it's all in Helen's mind, Or has the woman suddenly been thrust into a nightmarish existence? While either option is terrifying to contemplate, I should also say that Elizabeth Reaser really brings the thunder in her role. Personally, I believe that Helen is in fact stuck in a world that mirrors our own, but is far, far darker.
I disagree. But in the 5 years that I have had the pleasure of working with you on this radio broadcast, I have noticed you are quick to take the fanciful explanation.
That may be so, projectionist, but it's like John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. To me, the far scarier outcome would be becoming the last sane person in a world that has for no apparent reason gone insane. Having said that, I doubt sometimes it would be all that different than working down here in the vault. The ending to This Way to Egress is chilling, to say the least. The last segment of Nightmare Cinema comes courtesy of Mick Garris and is entitled Dead. Garris both wrote and directed this one, and where with This Way to Egress, what squeezes your heart is Elizabeth Reaser's convincing performance of a woman that might be losing her grip on sanity. With this last segment, it is the utterly powerhouse performance of Fali Rakotohavan. I bet I just butchered his name, and for that I do apologize. Fali plays a 12-year-old boy named Riley, who finds himself walking past the Rialto. Looking up, he sees the marquee just reads Dead. Venturing inside, he discovers there's an old organ up on the stage next to the screen. After demonstrating his musical talents, he looks up to see himself on the big screen.
Yes! Playing a rousing score upon a piano that, as we soon learn, was composed by the young boy. It would seem that Riley is a musical prodigy, dear listeners.
Not only is Riley given applause from the audience, but the two he wants to impress the most, his parents. His mother, named Charity, who, by the way, is played by none other than the X-Files and also Netflix's The Haunting of Hill House's Annabeth Gish. The joy of the recital is short-lived, however, as they get into their vehicle. Riley is grabbed around the neck and a gun shoved into his temple by a madman who was hiding in the back seat. This is Jenkins, played by American Horror Story's Orson Chaplin.
Any relationship to Charles Chaplin?
Absolutely, projectionist. Orson is the grandson of Charles Chaplin, as well as being the son to producer Elias Salkind of Superman fame. Jenkins is attacked by Riley's father, and the boy looks on in horror as both his father and mother are slain. He attempts to flee, but is shot in the back by Jenkins, only to wake up in a hospital emergency room, where he had been dead for 17 minutes, but miraculously brought back to life. Here's the catch, though. He's been changed by his ordeal. He can now see dead people.
One of those dearly departed that Riley can see happens to be his dear mother, Charity.
Yeah, this segment piles a lot on Riley's plate. For one thing, the killer knows the young boy has survived and has seen his face, so he heads to the hospital to finish the job. Worse, though, is Charity doesn't want to pass on to the other side without Riley. Let that sink in for a second. She wants him to let go, cease his struggles to stay alive, and join her. That is a whole new level of terror. Nightmare Cinema is wrapped up with The Projectionist, which was also written and directed by Mick Garris. In fact, I'm not positive, but I do believe the last scene of the character is in fact Mick Garris himself, standing in for Mickey Rourke. As the end credits rolled, I was left with a strong hope that this horror anthology succeeds. Like any anthology picture, there will be some segments you feel are better than others. That is just the nature of the beast. But afterwards, I found myself hoping that Mick Garris can continue in some form or another. A sequel. Or perhaps Shudder will offer a series deal. A weekly Nightmare Cinema series sounds pretty good to me. One last thing we should point out is the great scores in the individual segments. Richard Band of Puppet Master and Dr. Mordred fame composed the music for the Projectionist segments, Mirari, and Dead, with Kyle Newmaster providing the score for The Thing in the Woods, Aldo Shalaku provided the music for Mashit, and J.G. Thirlwell of The Venture Brothers and 2002's Resident Evil scored This Way to Egress. I was thinking, Projectionist, how awesome would it be for you to play yourself in a sequel to Nightmare Cinema?
I do not photograph well, Serge. It's complicated.
Friends, with that curious statement, I think that brings us to the end of this matinee episode of the Saturday Frights podcast. I hope you'll seek out Nightmare Cinema for yourself. Support it when it hits DVD and Blu-ray. See it in theaters if you're lucky enough to have that option. Thank you, as always, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to the show. We hope you're enjoying what we intend to be shorter episodes with these matinee episodes. The music you heard at the beginning and ending of our podcast was provided by Peachy. If you have musical needs, you can contact him at peachy@retroist.com. My co-host, The Projectionist, has his own Facebook page, Projectionist Haunted Drive-In. He generally shares old movie posters and newspaper advertisements throughout the week. It's always a treat to see what vintage thing he can dig up to share. As for myself, you can still find me posting a couple times a day on not just the Saturday Frights page, but the Diary of an Arcade Employee page too. I even managed to find time to share some things on the Retroist Clubhouse on Facebook now and again. If you'd like to contact me with suggestions for future episodes, you can reach me at VicSage@Retroist.com. Of course, we owe a great deal of gratitude to the Retroist himself, not just for hosting the show, but for nearly 10 years now, providing a spot on the internet where we can share our love of things retro. When you want to read one of the greatest collection of retro-themed articles and listen to some of the best retro-related podcasts, hop on over to TheRetroist.com. If you like the show, consider subscribing and giving us a rating over on iTunes or Stitcher and Spotify to help us spread the word. Now, let's listen to a clip from the subject of our next show.
The great icons of terror made their way onto the silver screen. One by one, they came to life through the combined imaginations of filmmakers, actors, and a single man whose makeup skills and artistic versatility would literally create universal monsters. His name was Jack Pierce.
He's probably one of the most important people in the history of monster movies. And yet also at the same time, he's one of the most unknown people.
This has been a Retroist production. Sleep well and goodbye.